There was once a wealthy landowner. He had two sons. And one day the younger son approached him. And basically it's what he said is, you know, Dad, I'm getting kind of tired of hanging around here waiting for you to die so I can get half the inheritance. Could we work out a deal here and I can just get, you know, half of it now? So Dad thought about it a little bit and he allowed that might be okay. So he sort of tallied up his net worth and liquidated what he needed to do, and he came up with an amount and he gave him his inheritance then. Well, the young man went to a far country and had all this money, and he spent most of it on wine and women, and then he wasted the rest. And eventually ran out of money. And a famine came upon that foreign land, and work was hard to get. He couldn't get a job. He couldn't do anything. So he ended up having to slop the pigs. And remember, this was a Jewish area, and pigs were thought of as unclean. And this was like the lowest of all occupations, was slopping the pigs. And it was so bad, he was so hungry, he became envious of what the pigs were eating. He became envious of what he was feeding the pigs to eat. And he thought back, and he remembered his father's place, and he thought about how his father's servants, they never had to struggle for something to eat or something to have. And he was so filled with regret at what he'd done, he decided that he could go back and throw himself on his father's mercy and ask if he could come back and be a servant to his father. So he headed back to his original country and to his original family. And when he came into view, his father saw him at a distance and ran out and greeted him and hugged him and was so thankful that he was back. And he ordered the other servants to bring him his best robe, and he put a ring on his finger and new sandals. He just showered him with love, and he ordered the servants to slay the fatted calf in a celebration party that they were going to have for the return of this son. Well, his brother, who had stayed there and worked hard, worked the fields, did what he was supposed to do, he was filled with resentment. And he came back to the town. He heard all this going on, the songs and everything, and he asked what's happening. He said, well, they're having a huge party. Why are we having a party? Your brother returned. He did. He was really upset, and he even confronted his father. And he said, why are you doing this? After all that I have done, I stayed here, I obeyed you, I worked hard, and I didn't even get as much as a skinny goat killed for me. And here he took off and wasted all of his inheritance, and for him you slay the fatted calf. And the father's response was, no, but we must lead with love. He said, what we have done, your brother was gone and now he has returned. Your brother was dead, but now he is alive. That, of course, is the story of the prodigal son. I looked up prodigal. I'd never done that before. Prodigal, it means to wasteful spending, spendthrift. Is a prodigal person. The title of my talk today is A Life of Character. The theme for the month of December is integrity. And the way I am looking at that is integrity is the base word integer one. I'm looking at integrity as oneness, our awareness of our oneness, oneness with one another, and oneness with the divine. Today is a life of character. Next week is going to be a life of courage. Christmas Eve will be a life of giving. And New Year's Eve will be a life of new beginnings. My 3 points today are, first, a life of character is a choice. Number two, am I living for my resume or my eulogy? And thirdly, it's okay to be flawed. First of all, a life of character is a life of choice. William Stratton Bruce, in his book, The Formation of the Christian Character, wrote, "Above all, character includes a choice, a settled habit or a bent of will, so that it can be seen in its outcome in conduct. Character takes up the raw material of nature and temperament and weaves these into a strong, well-knit texture of a fully moralized person." You know, I think this says a lot, but it's almost as important for what it doesn't really completely say. He talks about it from a moralistic standpoint. But morals change, and morals are dependent on the culture and the society that they exist in. So they are not a constant. It wasn't all that long ago that there were cultures in Africa and in South America where it was not only perfectly acceptable, it was recommended that you eat your neighbor. You know, cannibalism in some cultures was fine. So that type of a moral stance on character changes. What we're talking about in terms of permanence are the capital T truths, things like peace, generosity, feelings for other people, how we treat one another, and how we walk in the world are far more important than simply morals. Recently, I had an opportunity to talk with one of my colleagues in the Lower 48, and we collaborated on a kind of a problem that he had. He had a congregant who had stolen from her employer. And she was really uncomfortable with this after time. The reasons that she did it in the beginning, and she had no guilt about it, was that she had a medical emergency and she really needed the money. And number two, she knew that her employer had come by his wealth in unloving, unkind means, that he had taken from other people unfairly. He'd taken advantage of their situations. So she didn't mind taking a little bit from him. She felt really bad about it. And over time, she had paid it all back with interest. The employer had never even known that she had taken this money. But what she approached my colleague was about was she wanted to confess. She wanted to go and tell him what she'd done. And the question was, do you confess or do you keep it? This idea of character is a matter of choice. She made a choice in the beginning to take it, and now she's going to make a choice whether or not to confess. When I sat with that, what came to me, this is just my opinion, confessing would do no one any good at all. It might make her feel better for a short time, but in her profession, taking for your employer would have meant that she would never get another job. What good would that confession make? But the idea is that this idea of character is a matter of choice. Our story of the prodigal son, the three sort of main characters in there, and they all have character parts of this story. The youngest son, he was restless, he was driven. He wanted the good times and the pleasure now. It wasn't until his money ran out that he realized how good he had it when he was with his father. This is human nature. We're all like that to a certain extent. We all have that within us. Now the father, I think that's a very thinly veiled symbol for God. He had no condemnation. He didn't send the prodigal son on any guilt trips. He was no wagging his finger, I told you so. He had nothing but love, pure and unconditional. And then the older brother, he was self-righteous. He had no love, no compassion, no gratitude. He scolded his father. He had just anger and selfishness and judgment. And when a person's heart is flowing with pride rather than gratitude, it's a choice point. Ernest Holmes wrote in A New Design for Living, "Sound relations with others do not permit any selfishness. What good we may desire for ourselves, we must also desire for them. Jealousy of others can have no place in our thinking. What we would deprive them of, we would be depriving ourselves of. Life is one enormous, cooperative, interrelated creation. As we come to learn to cooperate with life and our fellow man, we are more nearly expressing the order and harmony that reside in the mind of God." Each one of us is fully capable of being any one of the characters in the prodigal son. Each one of us can have that jealousy. Each one of us can have that impulsiveness of the younger son. But also within each and every one of us is that capacity for forgiveness, for compassion, for love. And you are at choice which character you want to be. Point number two, am I living for my resume or my eulogy? A guy by the name of David Brooks wrote a book, The Road to Character. And this is what he said about his book. "The central question of this book is to not only do good, but to be good. How to live a life of depth and meaning over success and achievement. One way to begin the journey is by asking yourself one simple yet difficult question. Am I living for my resume or for my eulogy?" And what he means by that is, are we living by resume virtues, things like wealth, fame, and status? Or are we living our lives from eulogy virtues, the things that they're going to say at your funeral? Kindness, bravery, compassion, or what kind of relationships have we formed with others? Over in our Sunday school today, they're telling a story of a young girl, I think she was 3 or 4, and she stole some candy at the store, and her mom found out about it on the way home. And mom took the time to drive all the way back to the store and take the little girl in and pay for the candy. There's a lot to be said in that story. Part of it is about how we learn about character, those things in character that is not taking from one another, that's universal, it's not dependent on morals. But I think it also talks a lot about how important it is that we do teach our children. Another example, and I think this was in last week's youth lesson, was a story of a young boy in Little League Baseball. And he had a situation where he was playing second base, and it came in and he got the ball and he came to make the tag. But the umpire called the runner out. And the little boy told the umpire, "I didn't make the tag. He's really safe." And the umpire changed his call. Now, that was not an easy choice to make, because it allowed the runner to advance and for all the reasons in baseball. But he did what was right, what was true, what was fair. Another important lesson: we are at choice. Sometimes I think the kids next door are learning more than we do. Third point, it's okay to be flawed. Once again, turn to Ernest Holmes. He wrote in A New Design for Living, "And there is one person that we must learn to get along with above all others, and that person is ourself. We must never belittle ourself, never dislike yourself, never resent what we are or the way we feel, and stop feeling guilty in any way. God created us. We are its expression. If we have done many things wrong up to this time, if perhaps we have not been all things that we could have been, well, that's the way things are. But the larger possibility is always ahead of us. We can start becoming more of it right now. Start moving out of what we are into what we can be. The moment we start to get on good terms with ourselves, all else will fall into place, for then we will be in harmony with God. And God includes us and everything and everyone else." Holmes goes on. This comes from A Thing Called You. And he says pretty much the same thing in a little bit different way. If God created you after his own nature, and he's using the term of the time, the masculine, to include everybody. If God created you after his own nature, and there is nothing else that he could have made you out of, then the thing that you are after is already here within you. The only things that stand between you and it are the accumulated thoughts, beliefs, and emotions of the ages. But there is nothing there that has not been put there by yourself or by the race. He's talking about the human race. What has been put there can be removed. These unbeliefs are thought patterns laid down throughout the ages and accentuated by your own experience, by your inherited tendencies and environment. It's okay to be flawed. Another lesson they're having next door today is based on a children's book by Leo Tolstoy. It's called The Three Questions. I won't go into the entire story with you, but it's just a story of a young boy that is in quest of three questions. And it's really captured at the end. The wise turtle is talking to the boy Nikolai. And the wise turtle tells him, "Remember that there is only one important time, and that time is now. The most important one is always the one you are with. And the most important thing is to do good for the one who is standing at your side. For these, my dear boy, are the answers to what is the most important thing in this world." What I want everybody to take away today, the takeaway for today is this. We can choose to lead a life of character, not based on current morals, but based on truth, love, kindness, compassion. You can live your life for your eulogy and not for your resume. And it's okay to be flawed. So with this awareness of that divinity that is within each and every one of us, I invite my colleagues, the practitioners, to join me in simply knowing the truth for each and every person here today. there is indeed a power in the universe, one power, one presence, one life. And that life is the life of God. That life is the life of each and every one of us here today. And each and every one of us is made out of that same stuff. Each and every one of us is made out of God itself. And therefore, each and every one of us carries all of the properties of God within us. All of the love, all of the compassion, all of the connection. And so I speak my word now for each and every person who is experiencing separation, a sense of separation from one another, a sense of separation from God. We just simply know that it is impossible to be separated from God. For God is within each and every one of us. We cannot be separate from God. And so every relationship that we have, whether it be at work, romantic relationships, family relationships, make no difference because it's God, loving God. And I also speak my word for those who are experiencing health challenges. We know that the effects are very, very real. But we also know that we are made of that God stuff. And so there is a blueprint within each of us that is perfect. And it is that perfect blueprint that we embrace. And lastly, I speak my word for anyone experiencing a sense of lack and limitation, not enoughness, particularly strong this time of year when we want to give, we want to do things for other people, and sometimes it feels as if there is not enough. But the truth of the matter is, we live in an infinite universe, a universe that is so abundant, there's plenty for everyone, plenty to share and plenty to spare. And so now we just give thanks. We give thanks for our awareness of the power and the presence of God within ourselves, within one another. And what a gift it is to see that divine presence of those that we meet and greet every day. So we just give thanks. We let it go. We let it be. And so it is.